Okay, so let's start. So the area that we're taking up is Genesis 18. So let's just familiarize ourselves with this story. So what happens is, this is after Abraham receives the command for circumcision. And it says that God appeared to him in the plains of Mamre. God appeared to Abraham in the plains of Mamre. Mamre was a name of one of Abraham's peers. And he had given advice to Abraham, which was good. And therefore the Torah is giving honor to him, mentioning, citing his name in connection with the place. So it says that Abraham was sitting in the opening of his tent in the heat of the day. As the rabbis say, that he was Abraham was very cordial and very inviting and hospitable, and he loved people. He saw them as equal creations of God to himself. So he would always be hospitable and welcome them and take care of them. So he's now, even on the day where he's in a bit of pain, or maybe a lot of pain because of the circumcision, so he still sought out people that he can do kindness to. And he's sitting in the opening of his tent so he can see people, and this is in the heat of the day, despite the heat. And he lifted up his eyes, and he saw. And it says, behold, there were three men that were standing upon him, which could also mean waiting upon him. They were looking at him, and they were their attention was they were paying attention to Abraham. And then it says again in the verse, Vayar, and he saw. So the rabbis comment, why does that have to say that Abraham saw twice? It says in the beginning of verse 2 that Abraham lifted up his eyes. As he's sitting in the tent in the heat of the day, he lifts up his eyes, and he saw. And there were three men standing upon him. And then it says again, and he saw. So the question that they ask, what do you have to see twice? So it really means there's an understanding going on. So you don't see something twice. So the second one is that he understood. Okay. Another thing that's important to understand is that, according to Maimonides, we mentioned last week too, that anytime it says in the Torah an angel, whether it's in the beginning of the story or the end of the story, the event is not a literal event that took place on earth. It was some sort of a mental event, if you want to call it that. The vision, the prophecy, and we explained the story of Bilam and the donkey last week as a conflict. That's one type of a mental event, where you're thinking through conflicts that you have, and you're grappling with the things. Another could be where there's a prophecy that God gives you, a dream of sorts. Okay, so that's what's happening over here. So we're going to understand this story based on Maimonides, and he has a good source. He has good proof, because it says in the beginning, the very first verse in 18:1, that God appeared to Abraham in the plains of Mamre. But then the rest of the story doesn't say how did God appear? God is not physical. God's not on earth. So how could God appear to Abraham? So Maimonides says the first verse that God appeared to Abraham is then followed by how that appearance took place. And the appearance was in a prophecy of these three angels. All right, so it really fits very well with the verse. You have to know how to ask the questions and how to detect issues, but then see how it's answered. And of course, thank God we have the rabbis' words on this. So some sort of a vision is going on. And then we'll have to understand the purpose of the vision, the message of the vision. And of course, what is an angel? So there are a number of very important core issues that we're going to cover. So nonetheless, so God's appearing to Abraham. He's giving him a vision of some sort. And the vision starts with three men waiting on Abraham. So then Abraham sees, he understands that they're waiting on him. And then it says he runs to meet them from the opening of his tent. And he bowed down to them. He gave honor to them. Strangers. And he said to them, my master, if I have found favor in your eyes, don't pass by from your servant. He called himself a servant. Very interesting how Abraham spoke to people. And whether this is a physical event or a vision, it's still expressing truths about Abraham. And when he says something and how he talks and how he treats people is accurate, it's an accurate depiction of his perfection, of his personality and his values. So he calls the master and he says, don't pass by your servant, take a little bit of water. We're now in verse 18:4. And he says, wash your feet and stay under the tree, rest under the, recline under the tree, and I'll get you some bread, and you will satisfy yourselves, and after you can pass on your journey. And they said, we'll do as you spoke. So Abraham runs to the tent, and tells his wife, quick, prepare three quantities of flour, fine flour, and make cakes. And to the cattle that Abraham had, he ran, again it says he ran, and he took a young cow, soft and good. He picked a choice, one of his choice possessions, to give freely to strangers. And he gave this, so he selected a good calf, gave it to the young man, doesn't say who it was, and he runs again to prepare it. And he took some butter and milk and the calf, which was prepared, and he put it before the men, right? And they were, and he stood upon them, he waited upon them under the tree, and they ate. So one of them said, or they said, it's plural, they said, where is Sarah, your wife? That's amazing. What's the question over there? There's a question right there. So Abraham replies, and he says, she's in the tent. So you think at this point, they call her. I mean, why are they inquiring? And how do they even know who Sarah is? Unless you want to tell me that the way God's designing this prophecy, it's around the fact that Abraham was popular and people knew of him. So maybe there's no surprise, but still it's significant enough that it's put into these verses. So we have to understand, why are they asking for Sarah? And if they ask for her, why don't they then say, go get her, or bring her here, or we have something to say to her? But if you just ask where Sarah is, and Abraham says that she is in the tent, what happens next? So they say to Abraham, they're just talking to him, we're going to return to you, we're certainly going to return to you at this time next year, and Sarah's going to have a son. And Sarah heard, and she was in the like behind the tent, behind the opening of the tent. Okay, so she hears this. And this is, again, all in Abraham's vision. So, but the question is, if the angels are asking Abraham, where is Sarah, your wife? Why isn't that followed up with anything about that? They just ask where she is. He says that she's in the tent. And that's it. There's no further discussion with them and Sarah. But Sarah, it does say parenthetically that Sarah heard. And then it says afterwards in the next verse that Abram and Sarah were old. They were getting on in years, and Sarah stopped having the ability to menstruate. She couldn't have a child anymore. And so therefore Sarah laughed inside of herself. And she said, after I've been worn out, I'm going to have a child, and my master is so old. And God said to Abraham, still in the midst of this prophecy, why does this woman Sarah laugh? Is any and saying that, am I really going to give birth? Why is she laughing at that? Is anything really too difficult for God to do? Is anything too wondrous for God to perform? And God continues, and he says to Abraham in this vision, at the appointed time, like the angel said, next year, I will return to you, and Sarah is going to have a son. But then Sarah denies it. So evidently she's hearing this discussion between God and Abraham. And could because she was afraid. But he said to her, no, you did laugh. Don't deny it. Okay, little event with Sarah. Angels ask about where Sarah is, but they don't approach her at all. So what are they even asking? All right, what's the next thing that happens? So Abraham we see is very fast. And he honors people, he calls them his master, he calls himself a servant. He runs numerous times, 5 times that he's running to prepare this food for these people. What is so significant that God's recording in the Torah that Abraham is running all these times? And let's see what happens next. So now the men get up, and they start looking towards Sodom. So the rabbis say that there were three men, three angels. And why were there three angels? Because one angel doesn't do more than one mission. And we talked last week about that, that an angel means some force that God created in this world. Because, again, everything is created except for God. So we talk about angels, we refer to creations that have a certain ability to govern a certain aspect of nature. They govern some aspect, some sphere of the created world. And for so, therefore, each angel only has one area that it has dominion over. So the angel that came to announce the birth is not the angel that's going to overturn Sodom because of the crimes of Sodom. That was a second angel was needed for that. And the one who overturns Sodom is not going to be the one that saves Lot, Abraham's nephew. So you need a third angel for that. So each angel was appointed over its own task. Okay, so it says over here, we're up to, which is now 16, 18, 16 in Genesis. So the men got up, they finished eating, and they looked at Sodom. But they don't leave yet. That's interesting. What are you telling me that you're looking at Sodom for? And Avram goes with them to send them off. And then all of a sudden, God steps in. God steps in and says, and let me see what, Rivka and Muskie can't get connected yet. Let me see if I can help out. Hold on a second. Okay. All right, and let me just see if there's any questions at this point. I mean, we're still, you know, middle of the story, but let's see if there's any questions. So Brian, you're saying that Abraham's running could be being anxious to understand? I'm not sure. Okay, let's go further. So we're asking at this point, what was the reason why it states that the men were looking at Sodom, but they don't leave yet? We don't see that they leave until this whole discussion where God steps in and says, am I going to keep hidden from Abraham what I'm going to do to Sodom? And then there's a famous discussion that Abraham is told by God, tells Abraham that I'm going to go down now and see that if in accordance with the cry that comes to me from Sodom's evil ways, will I destroy them or not? So God says this to Abraham, and he preempts that by saying, will I keep hidden from Abraham what I'm going to do? And he's going to a great mighty nation, and he teaches his household after him to follow the ways of God, to do charity and righteousness. So God is speaking to himself at this point. But he records that in the Torah, of course, because he wants us to understand his consideration for why he engaged Abraham and taught him about new areas of justice that Abraham couldn't have known on his own. That's what God says, well, I keep hidden from Abraham what I'm going to do to Sodom, because there are areas that man can penetrate. He can use his mind. But there are areas, many areas, that unless God informs us, there'll be something that will be concealed, because we don't know God's knowledge in every area. We know very little. But here, of course, God wanted it to be some knowledge that Abraham would have because of God's consideration, where he says that in verse 19, because he is one that knows me, meaning to say that Abraham is an intelligent person, and he follows God's ways. And he's going to be teaching over God's ways, and due to that consideration, God now wants to inform to Abraham about certain areas that are hidden and how God works that's important for Abraham to know and then to teach the world. So he engages him in the conversation. And Abraham asks about how many people will it take to spare the city. And it's not that he's pleading for God not to do it, because we don't see where he says that. Like, for example, when Moshe pleads for God to save the Jews, he asks, forgive. He uses terms like that. But here, Abraham is just asking intelligently. He wants to understand what is the number of people that would be important, would be vital in order to save the rest of the evildoers. Because the piece of information that man cannot know in by studying the world is that evil people could be saved. According to intelligence, man would say that a righteous person should be saved and an evil person should be punished. And, of course, there's degrees of punishment. But God was now informing Abraham that even the evil people are going to be saved if there's a certain number of righteous people that might be able to help them, might be able to be influential. So that's not something which man could arrive on his own. So therefore God says, well, I keep this hidden from Abraham. And he's going to be teaching the world, teaching his household. Okay. All right, Shoshana, you have a question? Go ahead. Okay, so Shoshana, you're writing, I was taught that one of the reasons Abraham bargained is because he knew that there were X amount of righteous there. Well, I don't see it as a bargaining. I don't see it as a request. I see it that he's just inquiring how God works. And you're writing that he was bargaining because he knew if there were X amount of righteous people there, then they would be enough to influence the communities. And this is what Noach did not do. He did not challenge us. Okay, Shoshana. Yeah, Noach was not as engaging with the people, the rabbis say, as Abraham. Although the 120 years it took to build the ark, Noah was doing this at God's command in order to engage people, that they should ask what he's doing, and he should respond. But perhaps he did not go out to the world like Abraham. But nonetheless, and again, I just want you to be sensitive to the fact that the way God teaches, he just says, well, I keep hidden from Abraham. And that's for us to know. He didn't tell that to Abraham. All God says to Abraham is the cry of Sodom. This is 18:20. God says that the cry of Sodom and Amorah is great. And their evil, their sin, is heavy. Exceedingly heavy. I'm going to descend, and I'll see if, in accordance with the cry that comes to me, I will annihilate them, or I will not. I know what to do, God says. So you see what God does is, he poses to Abraham a predicament, because Abraham, when he hears God saying that the cry of Sodom and Amor is great, followed by God saying there's a possibility to annihilate them or not annihilate them, that's what catches Abraham. He says, why should God say that he's not going to annihilate completely wicked people? So that's what God, he formulated in that way in order to catch Abraham and engage him in thought, because that's always the process that God uses to teach. Right? The Torah is written cryptically because he wants to engage us in thought. And that, as we think and we probe, we can uncover. It's not a static list of information that we just memorize. So it's not only the Torah, but it's when God interacts with people. It's always in this format where he gives a vision which is a little bit cryptic and or maybe very cryptic. So that's what he did over here. I see a couple of questions on screen. I'll take them up in a second. But what God was doing here was giving just a little bit of an opening for Abraham to detect the issue and then to start probing and then ask God, why is it, God, that even if they're deserving of annihilation, you're going to allow them to live? So then Abraham said to himself, there's only one possibility. The possibility is that the wicked people will not be killed because the righteous people might be able to influence them. Otherwise, why would you not kill the wicked people? So that's exactly what Abram starts doing, is asking God. Now, the question is, what measure of righteous people do you need to have the influence? Okay? So I just want you to understand what's going on in that dialogue. Okay, and Jim, you're writing, what does God mean, I will descend and see? He already knows, so what does this mean? It means that he's opening a conversation for Abraham to engage. Okay. Okay, thanks for sharing that, Thiago, in terms of the method that you're using. Okay, Shoshana, good. All right. So now, again, back to the story. It's, you know, we saw that, again, the series of events is what? God says he appears to Abraham. How does he appear? There's a vision of these three men. Abram sees them, he runs to them, services them, and gets food and milk and butter and all, and waits on them and speaks to them in a kind way, and he keeps them running. And then we see that they ask about Sarah, where is she? But they don't talk to her at all. Why are they asking where she is? And they say to him, right after they find out that she's in the tent, they say to Abram that you're going to have a son next year. Okay? And another question we could ask too, why do you need three of them? If two of the angels, one was going to destroy Sodom and one was going to save Lot from that devastation, so let them just go straight to Sodom. What are they doing here with the angel that's announcing, all you need is one angel to come, the one that announced to Abraham that he's going to have a son next year. What do you need the other two there? Right? That has to be addressed. Okay, Jim, glad to see the point. Okay, and now after he finishes serving the men, and God rebukes Sarah and says no, because Sarah laughed when she heard behind the tent. She was able to hear that she's going to have a child next year. She denied it because she felt her husband was too old, she's too old, and God rebukes her. That seems to be a necessary part of this vision. And then the men finish eating, and they're going to get up and they leave, but they don't leave yet. They look at Sodom. And then God has this interjection right at that point. Am I going to keep hidden from Abraham what I'm going to do to Sodom? Why is that interrupting them? And you see there's the whole dialogue, and when they finally finish the discussion, which is in uh, 18, 33. So it says that after they finished the discussion, so it says that God left when he finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. And the very next verse is, then the angels came to Sodom. So you see that we're saying, you know, we're accurate with the storyline. They only look at Sodom. And then God comes in and has this whole discussion with Abraham. And Abraham asks, let's say there's 50 righteous people, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. And that's it. He doesn't ask any further. As soon as God says, as long as it's 10, I will not destroy. That's the end of the conversation. God leaves. Abraham returns to his place. Then the angels arrive at Sodom. We're told that only after the discussion is over. So that's significant. All right, so those are the facts of the story. Now let me open the questions up to you and see what's puzzling you, what you feel is significant here. Let's try to focus on what's central, what's peripheral. All right, so let me open it up to everybody now and let me hear your questions. All right. So, Brian, you're saying you had asked about the running. What is your explanation? Okay, I'll give you my answers. I just want you to have the opportunity to ask your questions first. And Shoshana, you're writing, and the one to heal the knot in the prophetic vision, what did that mean for Avram? Not clear. Shoshana, can you please clarify again? Yoni, you're asking as follows. Okay, question. Avram asks about the cities and doesn't ask how Sarah would be with child. Right, because Avram is asking about God's justice, not whether God can do something or not. So it's not a question about God's capabilities when he asks about the cities. He's trying to inquire in God's justice. And that was the whole reason God opened up the conversation, was to educate Avram in an area that he could not know on his own. It's impossible for a person to have the concept that a evil person should be saved unless God tells you that and also what the considerations are. That's something which is outside of justice. Justice demands that there's two extremes. There's goodness and there's reward and there's evil and there's punishment. But to say that there's evil and there's no punishment, that goes against the mind. A person couldn't arrive at that. Unless God tells you that, and then he tells you the considerations, why he would do that in certain cases. Frida, you are saying that Abraham was just asking to find out the numbers, but he says, will the judge of all the land not do justice? Right, that's I'm glad you brought that up. When Abraham says, Ashovet kol ha'aretz le'yaseh mishpat, you see that wasn't a question. Because if it was a question, you'd see an answer from God. So that was not a question. When Abraham says, the judge of the whole earth won't do justice, that was rhetorical. That was an exclamation. He was saying, God, I know you. You're the judge of the whole earth. You won't do an injustice. I know that. Now, let me inquire as to how this works over here, that you won't kill the evil people. So what he asks, that's what God responds to. But he didn't ask. That was not a question. All right, Frida. And Jim, you're asking, how did Abraham know to stop at 10? I believe Rashi is the one that says that he saw that God destroyed the world by Noah. And there were eight people there, and still the eight people didn't save the world. And I think it was another addition that God was joined with them to make it. Now, I'm not sure how it worked out, but he knew that from Noah, that below 10, it was not going to work. Shoshana, you're asking, I meant that if two of the three angels went forward, and the one who healed is the one who did not go with them, does that mean Avram is then healed? Yes, you could say that. And Jim, you're saying, why is Abraham worried about God being annoyed? Good question. Why would Abraham keep on saying to God, please, let me, you know, don't be angry with me, let me ask one more time? So, good question. Let me think about that for a second. I mean, there is, you see, Abraham had good insight, because you see, God was angry with people in the Torah. He was angry with Moses for asking a few times to go into the land after God said you can't go into the land. So anger means that it's an incorrect request. So Abraham knows that God doesn't have anger. It's just a term that God uses to express disapproval to man. So Abraham didn't know where he was crossing the line, evidently. So when he says, don't be angry, meaning I don't know how far I can inquire over here and what is open to me and what's closed to me. So that, I would believe, would be a proper way to understand Abraham asking God not to be angry or being annoyed. And Frida says, he also says, Chas Chalilacha. Right, Chalilacha is also not a question, Frida. When he says Chalilacha, means it would be mundane for you to act a certain way, and I know that, and it's not a question. It's part of Abraham's exclamation. When he hears from God that he's going to either annihilate or not annihilate Sodom, so now he knows that there's no question that the righteous people are going to be saved. That's not a question. I know that, because Abraham says, will you wipe away the righteous? Let's read it inside. It says, this is 18:25. It'll be mundane for you, God, from doing such a thing to destroy the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should find the same fate as the wicked. That's not something you would do. That the judge of the whole earth won't do mishpat, won't do justice. That I know. That is Abraham making an exclamation of truth. His question comes next. He says, if there will be found in Sodom 50 righteous people in the city, will you show favor to the entire place because of those 50? That's the question. But before that is just exclamation. Okay? And you know that because God doesn't respond to it. Because it is not, if God, you know, if Abraham asked a question, so that God would respond. That was the whole purpose of the dialogue. Okay, Shoshana, you're asking, does 10 righteous have to do with the 10 tests? No. Like I said earlier, it was just that he knew from the story of Noah, that less than 10 would not warrant the salvation of the people. Okay, Thiago, thanks for that. Let me put this in here. Perhaps Rivka can access it that way. All right. Jim, you're asking, if 10 could not save the world, would you not still think that it could save a lesser amount, like 5 cities? Well, we're only talking about, yeah, so it could be, but evidently, you know, Abraham had a certain line where she said he already knew that that's as far as it would go. Okay. Any other questions? And did I answer all of your questions? Okay, Shoshana. So let me tell you what I think is the understanding of the story. Okay, Jim, I'm not going to go into the arrival of the angels. I'm keeping the class today limited to the vision of Abraham. But after explaining that, then I'll take your question up. If you want to specify what your exact question is, I'll be glad to take that up. All right, so this is how I understand the story. And that is that Abraham is now perfected, and he's having a vision from God. He's perfected himself. He just went through the circumcision, and he follows God's, commands and his ways. And all of a sudden, he has this vision. And in the vision, we see that he's running to serve these men. So what this shows, and it's a vision for Abraham, is to show him that he has a certain level of perfection. And his perfection is expressed in justice and equality for all mankind. Because of that, God now is going to give him additional information about how he works, because the whole purpose is, for man's existence, is to come closer to a love of God. And the love of God, like Maimonides says, is in direct proportion to our knowledge of God. And in order for people to have greater knowledge, so God has to impart it to us, and he gives it to those people that are searching for it. And being that Abraham was one who upheld justice and studied God, and he extricated himself from idolatry when he was young, he served idols, but he, with his own mind, Maimonides says, with no teacher or books, he was able to use his mind, that amazing tool that God gave us all, to reject and develop proofs against idolatry and for the existence of God, and to teach tens of thousands of people through his life. Now, due to his perfection and his kindness, which means that perfection alone intellectually is not the goal. Maimonides says at the end of his book, The Guide for the Perplexed, that God desires that persons not only becomes wise and knows God, but that he performs righteous and charity with others. And this is what this is showing here. So God is showing Abraham that you're not only intelligently perfected and you follow my commands by following circumcision, but that you're running after people and you're in your kindness. Because of that, that's why this is part of the vision. And then God imparts to him information. So these three men really mean that there are three different plans that God has, but they are integrally tied to Abraham, who's going to teach the world about them. That's why the men don't leave until God engages Abraham and gives him more knowledge. That's why it says they looked at Sodom, but they didn't leave. Meaning that they're eventually going to go there. And that was, God knows the future and he knows all considerations. So there's no talking God out of what he knows has to be done. But it shows you that until there's a discourse that God educates Abraham further on justice, until that is done, the purpose of the destruction of Sodom is going to be compromised. Because the destruction of Sodom was not so much getting rid of the evildoers, which you have to get rid of evildoers. You can't have people in the world that are going to be a certain level of a criminal. So they have to be removed, they have to be destroyed. That's why you have a death penalty. But equally important, if not more important, is that we understand God's methods of justice in doing so. So before they actually go, before the angel goes to Sodom to destroy it, God engages Abraham. That means to say that your understanding of the destruction is important enough that has to precede the actual destruction. Meaning it's the destruction is, in a manner of speaking, dependent on there being an intelligent person in the world that can understand and teach God's ways. So that's what it means that they were about to go. They were looking at Sodom, but they didn't go yet until God educated Abraham further on his justice. Then they can go. Now everything's in place. Now the destruction of Sodom will find its true purpose in the world, not just the removal of the evil people, the evildoers, but now there's somebody that can understand God's ways in the world and teach, because that's the whole goal. It's for man to understand God. All right? I want you to understand that. It's very important. Okay, and I believe that also answers why did they ask where Sarah is, but then they didn't do anything. They didn't speak to her. They didn't say, oh, she's in the tent, go get her. You'd think that that would follow. Somebody asks where somebody is because you want to have a communication with them. But they ask where Sarah is. Avram replies, she's in the tent. And then they just continue talking to Abraham, and you're going to have a child next year. So what I believe that means to say is they were asking to make sure that she was not present. Meaning, the angel was saying, in other words, let me make sure that Sarah's not around. So he asked, where is she? Avram confirms, she's in the tent. She's not in earshot. It doesn't matter that she did hear. The point is that the intent of the angel is to teach Abraham that the child is coming because of a certain purpose. And it's the purpose is not for Sarah. Okay, hold on 1 second, please. So we've got to call you back. I'm just in the middle of the class, okay? Okay, so when he asks where Sarah, and he says that she's in a tent, he's just confirming that she's not in earshot, in order to say to Abraham, in other words, you're going to have a son, and it's not so much for Sarah to have a child, but the child is all part of the purpose of you teaching the world. He's going to be the next one in line to teach. And since this vision is all about God's justice, and that the reason why Abraham received this information is because he was his speed in serving people. Why did he run to them? Because when you run to a person to help them, it makes them feel even more honored and respected. And Abraham knew how to respect the person, not just in action, but psychologically. How can I make that person feel much more honored and respected? I run to do something for them. That's very impressive. I feel humbled if somebody does that for me. And Avram knew that. So, and he wanted to give that to people. And he knew that that would also create a platform for them to hear his ideas. And it also talks about Abraham planting a tree, and that he invited people, that he shared with them knowledge, and he catered to them on other occasions. All this was to make their open their hearts to him in order that he can then open their minds. Okay, so now we understand the running. We understand why they asked about Sarah. Because they're trying to say it's not so much for her that you're having the child. It's important that a woman is satisfied with a child that feels good. And God made a woman that way, that she is very attentive to children. Because God wants a child to be brought up and cuddled and showed affection. And Rabbi Chait once explained that the Miriam and her mother Yocheved, so in Egypt when the Jews were having the children, so they had a transmission, they had a mesorah, a tradition, I should say, that when you raise a child, you have to caress it physically. That's part of how the child will physically, instinctually feel good and comfortable. But you also have to make nice sounds to the child, because that soothes the child's psyche. So that's why they gave the names of Shifra and Pua. Shifra means to caress. And that was one of the names of Miriam and Yocheved. And the other one had a nickname, Pua. Pua is like you make a sound, a nice soft sound to the child. So you see that raising a child in a certain way is essential, that it has a mind that's, matures properly and it develops health, in a healthy manner. So it's important that God made women in the way that they have this attentiveness and they have more of a softer nature than men. But the goal here of having the child is being told. It's being told to Abraham, not to Sarah, in order to indicate that this is really the plan of you having now this child is going to be for the good of mankind. Okay, that's why I believe they asked where she was in order to secure that she is not listening. But it's not that they didn't want her to know. It's that they wanted Avram to know that this is for you. It's the plan of you being a teacher of monotheism. Okay. Let me see if there's any questions. I did not understand about 19.1, the arrival of the angels. Okay. Yeah, we'll take that up in a minute, Jim. And is the Akedah then also a prophetic vision? Yes. Oh, no, sorry, not the Akedah. The Akedah was not. At a certain point, there was a vision that he had. You're right. Because, according to Maimonides, how do you work that out? He says that the entire story, if it says angel, has got to be the entire story is a vision. I think there is going to you're going to have to say that that's one case where that does not apply, because otherwise, where's the perfection of Abraham? If he didn't really, in his waking state, unless you want to say that in the vision, it shows the perfection of the person either way. Nonetheless, God is communicating it to us that this is something which is real. And we talk about this in the prayers on the high holidays, and that God should remember what Abraham did. So we have to take that story literally. It must be in that story with the angel, that's a separate new story. But the actual taking him up to the mountain, the fact he was about to slaughter Isaac is real. Okay. Right, Shoshana, I hope that clarifies it. Okay. All right. Okay, so I think that covers the all the issues that we raised. Right, again, the question about why he was running, we explained, to show kindness to the men, and it demonstrated to Abraham, this is the reason why I'm now going to give you this prophecy, is because look how you run to people. So God is showing Abraham in a vision how he's treating people. And it's because of that, that's why the vision opens with that. Now God says, in other words, because of your kindness to people, and because you want to teach justice, and you act out justice primarily because you acted out. Look how you're treating these three men. Now I'm going to impart to you more knowledge that you could not have arrived on your own. And we see that the angels all came to Abraham, even though two of them didn't have to come. They could have gone straight to Sodom. They had nothing to do with announcing the birth of Isaac. But the reason they came, I'm explaining, is because to show that their mission in Sodom depended upon Abraham, that there was somebody in the world that would have this knowledge and share it with others. And that's why they didn't leave to Sodom until there was a conversation that Abraham had with God and he learned more knowledge. Okay. All right, so let me hear any of your questions or comments at this point. Those are the questions. I believe we answered all the questions. No, they didn't leave, Jim, before Abraham spoke. It says that they looked. All right, if you look at the verses, it says... Yeah, I'm sorry, you are right. It says in 22, after God starts the conversation, then the men... What it says is that the men then turned, and they went to Sodom. They didn't arrive there yet, but they're going. Why does it say that they left at that point? You're right, I'm glad you brought that up. I was incorrect before when I said that they didn't leave until the conversation was over. No, they didn't leave until the conversation started. Meaning that they are going. That's God's plan. He knows what has to be done. So they're going even before Avram has a whole conversation with God. Don't think that any conversation that Abraham has with God is going to change God's plan. God has absolute knowledge. And he tells you that because it shows you the angels are going already. What's about to happen is already set in stone. But they don't leave until the conversation starts to indicate to us that the conversation was something which was part and parcel of the plan of Sodom. So they don't go to Sodom. They don't start leaving to Sodom until Abraham starts having a conversation with God. All right, and that's for the reason we said that there should be somebody who understands God's justice. It's not just getting rid of the evildoers, but that there are people in the world who understand why God works a certain way and teaches the world. That's essential to God's justice. Okay? Glad you brought that up, Jim. Okay, Brian, I'm glad we answered your questions. Okay, is it clear to everybody else? Okay, Shoshana, my pleasure. All right, if there's no other questions, so that'll wrap it up for today. We'll continue next week. And I'll send out an email so we know, you know, what the topic is if you want to prepare. All right, so everybody have a good day. Think it over. The recording will be online if you didn't hear the entire recording. It'll be in the audio page. And this way you can hear it in its entirety. So have a good week, everybody.